This is an interview with Alan B. Levinson by Richard Rowe for the SEC Historical Society, being held on January the 13th, pardon me, the 14th, 2003, at the offices of Fulbright and Jaworski. Alan, you came to the SEC in the early 1960s after a distinguished academic career. What was it that brought you to come to the SEC? You probably could have chosen where you wanted to practice law.
I had various options at the time from law school, more particularly private practice with law firms, as well as different government agencies. I selected government because I believed, which in fact turned out to be the case, that I would receive more responsible work more quickly and hopefully make a contribution.
And you certainly did. When you first arrived at the SEC, it was about the time Bill Terry became chairman.
It was before. I was the first person in the summer program and the honors program. And Ned Gatsby was then chairman. And after that, Bill Terry became chairman. Technically, it was Ned Gatsby for a short period of time, and then Bill Carey, and then straight through Manny Cohen, and finally ending up with Rod Hills.
And Hamer Budge was in there.
In between, there was Hamer Budge, who was responsible for my appointment as director, Bill Casey, who also made a terrific contribution to the securities laws, simplification, as well as objective standards, and doing away with metaphysics.
You mentioned the summer program and the honors program. I too went to the SEC for the first time in the summer program and got into the honors program when I was hired. But I think some of the younger members of society and the others listening to this interview would be shocked to hear what the compensation was, even if you got into the honors program back in those days. Do you remember?
First, Dick, as you well know, you didn't go to government for the pay. Otherwise, I would have gone into private practice with private law firms. My recollection is that I started off in the honors program at the SEC at $5,000 a year or thereabout.
That's probably pretty close. I think when I started, it was $7,500 and $9,000 when you got into the honors program. That's a little misleading because I did some research later on, and the starting salaries for young associates in D.C. law firms, at least, were not that much higher than we were getting at the SEC at that time. But
it was a couple of $1,000 difference, plus New York was higher, and California was higher, and a couple of $1,000, even though in absolute amounts, was not that significant. In relative amounts, it was very significant.
Yes, it was. The dollar amount, I've heard. When you started in Division of Corporation Finance. What was your, where were you assigned there?
I was assigned in Corp Fin to Regulation A and worked for the then branch chief, Pat Griffin, for a short period of time. Had the opportunity to write a motion in connection with an issuer, the special counsel for the issuer at the time was Louis Laws from Harvard Law School and Milton Crow from Washington, D.C. And the motion that I wrote was submitted to Ed Worthy, then the Assistant Director of Investigations, Suspensions, and Proceedings. And that's how I came to his attention, all within a very short period of time, and, as I would put it, a lucky break.
And unlike today, each division had its own enforcement and investigative office in those days.
Yes, at the time we did not have an enforcement division. As you mentioned, Dick, each division had its own enforcement unit broken down by function. For example, corporate finance, better known as CorpFin, had the branch of administrative proceedings and investigations. Corporate regulation, which today is investment management, dealt with investigations relating to mutual funds and other investment companies. Trading and exchanges, then called, subsequently called trading and markets, and subsequently called market reg, had its own unit dealing with broker dealers. So CorpFin was in charge of all issuer enforcement.
Did the general counsel and the regional offices play a part in that as well?
The regional offices played a part in suspensions for Regulation A, and they coordinated with the branch in Regulation A in CorpFin. The general counsel's office coordinated if we went to court seeking an injunctive action, if we were referring it criminally to the U.S. Attorney's Office, or generally as advisor to the Commission on Administrative Proceedings.
And who were some of the people that you worked with in the branch of administrative proceedings and investigation in those early years?
We had a terrific group, Dick. The first head that I worked with and for was Ed Worthy. He was from Carrollton, Georgia, a real gentleman, a real professional, and very public interest orientated. It was a small group which included Fred Morse, who subsequently became member of the special study and then chairman of the Boston Stock Exchange, Gene Rotberg, also who subsequently became a member of the special study in 63, and then became treasurer of the World Bank, amongst other things. As you know, you were a member of it, and in addition to yourself, Neil McCoy was a member, and John Talby, Lenny Steinsaber, and a few others. All crackerjack lawyers that were interested in making the contribution. We worked well as a team, and hopefully we did make the contribution.
And Ralph Tracy was in that group too, wasn't he?
Ralph Tracy was a senior member in that group, as was Alan Kilmer. Ralph Tracy subsequently became an administrative law judge, and Kilmer was a senior financial analyst. Both of them had special expertise in criminal reference work and worked on some of the biggest cases that the commission had in the 50s and the 60s.
Do you remember some of the names of some of those cases?
United Dyeing Chemical, Lowell Burrell. I remember Tracy and Kilmer going to Brazil, chasing them down, and eventually getting him on a Form 4. He was involved in quite a number of alleged manipulations, but the charge eventually was a Form 4. And it was the creativity of the staff, who generally was nowhere near as experienced as counsel representing the respondents or defendants or witnesses, but had a drive and a genuine interest in the public interest and hopefully participating in some way in policy making.
If I remember, Ralph Tracy also had some connection with investigations involving Roy Cohn.
He did, as I did. And I remember questioning Roy Cohn one time in connection with Fifth Avenue Coach, an investment company, alleged investment company. And I remember Roy Cohn saying to me when I questioned him at the then New York regional office, I was a prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office, I've been a defense counsel, and now I'm a witness. Go ahead and ask any questions you want to ask. I also taught criminal law.
Eventually you became the head of the branch of Administrative Procedure of Investigations.
That's correct. I worked my way up from a law clerk trainee to general attorney, trial attorney, branch chief, and assistant director, then the head of the, what is today, the enforcement aspect and unit.
And who were you working under in those days?
Basically, Ed Worthy, who subsequently, after becoming, moving from assistant director and heading up the equivalent of the enforcement shop to the director of the division, Charlie Shreve, executive assistant director of the Holman division, Bob Bagley, associate director, and I worked with other assistant directors throughout the division, including Ralph Hocker and a lot of the branch chiefs and a lot of staff attorneys who would refer cases to the branch of administrative proceedings and investigations. When I talk about that unit, I'm talking about stop order proceedings against registration statements. I'm talking about administrative proceedings under 15C4 relating to periodic reports. I'm talking about investigations relating to proxy statements, annual reports, quarterly reports, current reports. I'm talking about investigations involving mergers, acquisitions, and tender offers, as well as ownership and beneficial statements of ownership.
That's quite a broad spectrum of authority to investigate. Did you work with the other enforcement offices at the commission?
Yes, Dick, and found them very helpful, particularly when I had tough issues to consult with Irv Pollack, who was then initially in general counsel's office, and then moved over to trading the markets and trading exchanges. Further, when it was a very unusual legal question, in addition to Irv, I would consult with Phil Loomis. Relating to other enforcement matters, particularly the program dealing with sensitive payments, when I was director, I dealt very closely with Stanley Sporkin and the then Division of Enforcement.
Stanley came to the commission right about the same time, maybe a little later than you did. What did you think of Stanley when you first met him?
Stanley is one of the most creative persons that I've ever met and has great energy. Great energy. He certainly is provocative, and will catch everybody's attention. I think at the time, Dick, he was better known than the then Attorney General of the United States in terms of law enforcement when Stanley became the Director of the Enforcement Division.
What were some of the big cases that, once you became head of the Administrative Proceedings Office, what were some of the big cases that the office handled?
First, we questioned Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters' entry by means of loans to casinos in Las Vegas. Secondly, we questioned members of organized crime, including very noted figures that were on the front page of the New York Times or Wall Street Journal. And their entry or attempted entry into public companies through stock ownership and secret control. In terms of the...
Before we leave that topic, I've never known you to back off from anybody, but were you ever a little bit nervous about having those notorious gentlemen in your office at a closed door?
Well, let me tell you a story when I questioned Jimmy Hoffa. It was at a public administrative proceeding, and he was represented by Edward Penn Williams at the time. And I was within 1 year out of law school, and they had nobody else to try the case, so they gave it to me. I recall after my direct examination, and I did a miserable job, Williams really cut me up, but I learned from him as much as from anybody else. You learn from your mistakes and your errors. At the conclusion of direct examination of Jimmy Hoffa, the then administrative law judge, Irv Schiller, said, "Mr. Williams, do you have any questions on cross-examination?" Before he could get out a word, Hoffa said, "Sit down, you have no questions. I want you to know that I hate Bobby Kennedy, who was then Attorney General, and I hate you, Mr. Levinson, for subpoenaing me." At the conclusion of the hearing, Mr. Hoffa came over, shook my hand, and said to me aside, "No hard feelings, Alan. I had to say it for the press." Now, getting back to your question about was I concerned about the notoriety of some of the characters, particularly organized crime, no, but I do recall that some of the attorneys in the group didn't want to sign the subpoena. And I signed the subpoena. They didn't want to question him, so I went up and questioned him. I think at the time when you're very young, you're right out of law school, you don't have as many qualms as you otherwise might. I thought it was exciting. I never was concerned. I might say, Dick, that you became the head of that unit, just like you became a successor director of CorpFed after me, and you know as much about that unit as I do, although a different, you know, facet of it. So I think your input could be very helpful to any oral history.
One of these days, Alan. Would you say that enforcement policy was generated more from the kinds of cases that the staff identified and brought to the commission, or did it come from direction from the commission? Or did it depend on who was chairman at the time?
None but some of the foregoing. More particularly, most of the cases investigated by the staff in the branch of administrative proceedings in Corp Fin did not come from the commission. It was isolated. I can count one case that came from the commission upon reflection. Investigations were generally triggered by one, anonymous complaints, two, references from other divisions, three, references from the Corp Fin processing branches, four, references in newspapers, or five, other government agencies. Or some mixture of what I have cited, but certainly not from the commission. It was more an upstream flow than a downstream direction.
Did you ever encounter or feel pressure from sources outside of the commission to try to affect the course of investigations or proceedings?
Yes, but isolated. One time, there was a call from chief of, there were a couple of calls from the chief of staff of a House committee. I felt that the effect was to try and put pressure on me to expedite a registration thing. That's when I was head of Corp Fin, the director. I also, when I served in that position, had gotten a call from a high official at Treasury Department on a totally different matter, that he wanted to be an honest broker with us, with one of the largest companies in the United States. And I told him on the phone, thank you very much, but we don't need honest brokers, and I hung up on him. I might say that I had gotten a call after hanging up on him within 2 minutes from Ray Garrett, then chairman of the commission, who said, Alan, I just got a call from the assistant secretary of treasury who said you hung up on him. Is it true? And I said, yes, it is. He said, why'd you ever do that? Doesn't sound like you. I said, because he wanted to be an honest broker, and this commission doesn't need honest brokers. We can handle our matters. And I said, Ray, stay out of it. And he did.
Ray was a very wise man.
Ray was an outstanding chairman. The commission's been blessed by having outstanding chairpersons and commissioners. And I'd say other staff in different divisions, as well as Corp Fin, excluding myself, I'll make no comment.
Eventually, there came a time when you left the commission, I don't know whether I could call it prematurely or for a sabbatical or whatever, but you did leave the commission at a time in the late 60s. Is that correct?
That's correct, Dick. I had the opportunity to go with an investment advisory complex, and I thought it would be a challenge to learn the business. And as a result, I went with a investment advisory group out in California and first got involved in private placements and then in various mutual fund matters progress within the organization, from vice president to senior vice president to executive vice president. And then I left and came back to the commission. I had received an offer to become director of CorpFed. And much to my wife's annoyance, I said yes.
I might say
she was annoyed because it was a significant cut in compensation and uprooting of the family. So I could understand it.
I once heard you say that being director of the Division of Corporation Finance was one of the best jobs in the entire country. And I guess that must have contributed to your decision to come back to the commission.
Dick, it's a fair quote. I considered it the most exciting job that I've held. In terms of, one, the nature of the issues, two, the people that I worked with, three, the opportunity with a team to make a contribution. And I emphasize a team. I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to work with a group of people who, in my experience, in government and out of government, are as good as anywhere.
And you came back, you were as the director of division. Up until then, you had been doing what you once called, what I was doing, playing cops and robbers. What were the differences between playing cops and robbers and running the entire division with all of its responsibilities?
The big difference was scope of work. As the director of the SEC's CorpFin, the scope of work increased geometrically because I had to get involved in processing operations, personnel, unusual proxy and disclosure questions, shareholder democracy, shareholder proposals, tender offers, contested actions, mergers, acquisitions, etc. So the work as director was much broader. Secondly, I had to be more of a manager of resources than I ever had to be when I had a small little team in the branch of administrative proceedings and investigations. Three, I made a conscious effort to get involved in matters that I had not previously been involved in, or conversely, not to get involved in matters that I had been previously involved in. Namely, I was very fortunate to have a great team in the branch of administrative proceedings and investigations, including yourself, Dick, and Neil McCoy, and Tom Holloway, and Kilmer, and Tracy, and others, Callie, Kessler, Bob, Warbell, Lenny Steinsaper. So I made a conscious effort to get involved in areas other than administrative proceedings because the team was so strong. So I got involved very heavily in rulemaking, in form changes. And I think a lot of that had to do with Bill Casey also, because he was always looking for new ideas. And let's change this, and let's do away with metaphysics.
So Bill was, unlike some other chairmen, more involved in setting the policy from the top rather than having it filter up from down below.
I wouldn't put it that way.
In broad terms, not that he would dictate the details.
He was looking for ideas and relying upon the staff to come up with the ideas, and then he would filter the ideas and he would build on the ideas, or he would himself suggest ideas, but he was looking to the staff for that. But he was always there as a creative motivator.
When you became director, did that get you more involved in what other divisions were doing in matters of policy or matters that might impinge on what Corp Fin was doing?
The answer is yes. And we in Corp Fin had significant delegated authority from the commission at the time. And as a result, we not only had more work there, but also we were asked to comment upon, on different occasions, not regular basis, amicus briefs, but involved Corp Fin disclosure terms, such as materiality. For example, we did the amicus brief, which had been initially bounced and then assigned to me, and if I would work with Harvey, which I did, and we did the amicus brief in Northway.
I remember that. Harvey being Harvey Pitt.
Yes.
What would you view as your two or three greater accomplishments while you were director? And that may be repeating some of the things you said earlier, but
one, the accomplishments that I view as highly significant, to me, I was a member of a team. I can't stress that strongly enough. We had a great team of people, and so I look at myself as a participant in a highly motivated group of people. Now, the team, in my view, if I was to identify significant contributions, such contributions would include the following. One, the 140 series of rules. More particularly, sale of restricted securities, 144, intrastate offerings, 147, 145, the rescission of the no-sale theory on mergers, and the predecessor of the 500 series of rules, namely 146. Second accomplishment was to become a significant participant as part of the team in corporate governance and shareholder democracy. At that time, we had campaign GM and shareholder proposals, the nature of a board of directors, the third accomplishment to me would have been our participation and origination of a sensitive payments program, which we euphemistically use as a term to refer to payoffs or bribes to win overseas contracts or retain overseas business, and which led to the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act of 1977. It also led to the commission requesting the New York Stock Exchange to establish audit committees as a condition of listing, which, in fact, the New York Stock Exchange did. That was a letter from Rod Hills, the then chairman of New York Stock Exchange. Another accomplishment as a team that I would identify pertains to the 1940 Act. More particularly, Corp Vent at that time reviewed all 40 Act prospectuses. And we did the rule which literally netted fees, saved substantial amount of money for investors, as well as put an end to the harsh penalties for oversale inadvertently of the number of shares registered. The final contribution that I would say, although I'm sure that every member of our team would look at it differently on any of the contributions, but the ones that come to my mind is one additional one. And Dick, you were active in all of these, and particularly in this one, and that is the case that Corp Fin initiated and which you really shepherded, and that was National Student Marketing, involving the professional roles of lawyers, accountants, etc. And I think that was a landmark. So those are the things that come to mind.
We've been talking about, for the most part at least, the people in the commission that you dealt with. You mentioned a few outside the commission, like Edward Bennett Williams and Milton Kroll. But as director, particularly, you dealt with the captains of industry, the people on the street, and others, and did that well. And I think that was part of your philosophy, that this is, you know, we're not the enemy. We're there to protect investors, but only to the extent that it's necessary to protect investors.
Well, I think it was important to understand the tone of the corporate finance division, its culture. I think by saying a few words about the tone, you can understand Corp Fin, in my view, effectively. And that is, we always looked at business that most people, most leaders of industry, most businesses were honest businesses and honest people, as distinguished from everybody was a crook. We never looked at it that way. The fact that somebody went off the reservation or turned corrupt to us was an isolated factor. And I still believe that's the case today, notwithstanding the terrible scandals we've had recently. Those will be taken care of by the law enforcement authorities. But for all those scandals, there are many honest business people. Many more so. One vignette comes to mind, and that is the commission's continuous attempt to be even-handed, create a level playing field, and to be fair-minded. And I recall very well when Citicorp came out with a new product, and Walter Wriston was the head of Citicorp. And in the processing of the registration statement, there were all sorts of pressures. Let's get this done quickly, as distinguished from this will cause this intermediation with savings and loans. So you had the Hill saying, hey, hold this up. You had Citicorp saying, don't hold this up. We got to move. At the same time, we had another circumstance on that case whereby Citicorp took the position they did not want to supply Corp Fin with supplemental information as to the dollar amount of REITs in their portfolio, which was a problem throughout the country at the time. that they would make the decision on what material. They would only supply us what they thought was material, as distinguished from what the staff in the processing branch requested. I took the position that this was highly unusual, and they had the right not to supply any information, just like we had the right not to accelerate. As a result, I was before the full commission within 2 days at Walter Liston's request that he be heard, and I was called to the commission. And Ray Garrett was then chairman, and Ray said, "Mr. Liston, you requested this meeting," and Mr. Liston, chairman of Citicorp, then said that Citicorp has the right to determine what's material, not Corp and staff, and he went on. For 15 minutes. I was then asked by Chairman Garrett for a reply, and my reply was as follows. Exxon and General Motors are the largest companies in the United States, not Citicorp. Neither Exxon nor General Motors try to arrogate to themselves what's material, but they submit as supplemental information what's requested by the staff, and I see no reason why Citicorp should be treated differently. And to the commission's credit, they did not treat it differently, and the matter passed.
That reminds me of another accomplishment, which you didn't mention, and that is the relationship of the commission's mission, which is disclosure, or one of its missions, disclosure to investors, and the banking regulators who were saying our mission is protection of depositors, and we don't want our banks giving a lot of this information that the commission would like to get from them. You remember those discussions and controversies?
I remember very well Arthur Burns, the then chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. And we had Christmas Eve discussions at the SEC, particularly about the New York City municipal bond crisis. And I might say that Sandy Burton was then chief accountant, and Ray Garrett, myself, others. And you must give the SEC commissioners great commendation for standing tall and not being pressured, but that the law should apply to everybody equally, regardless of who you are. I think that was a great strength of the commission. I think the New York City crisis, the role of Corfin, was highly important. I would add that to one of the achievements as a team that we did have. I might say there were a few others that I'd like to identify, and that was that there were special studies by individual commissioners at the time, whether it was Frank Wheat on the reappraisal of the disclosure policies, in which you were very active, Dick, or Dick Smith, again, which you were very active in terms of helping rewrite the report, Dick Smith on institutional investors, and Corp Finn played a role, both substantive and logistical, in each of those studies. And I think that was significant.
And there was a later study by a former commissioner, Ms. Al Sommer,
played
a very important role.
I was on that when I was entered private practice, both before I entered private practice and it continued after I did enter private practice with Fulbright and Jaworski. And that was an additional reexamination of the disclosure requirements by Al Sommer. And Corp Finn again was very helpful in that regard.
Yeah, Mickey Beach was the executive director of the study, and
Yes. Necky did a great job. Necky did a great job. You were director at the time after I left. Actually, I was director when the study was completed.
Eventually, you determined to once again leave the commission. If you care to, could you let us know what some of the considerations that led to your going into private practice?
Sure. Dick, as you know, we have two children. And one was becoming close to college age. You asked me if I'd like to comment on one. I went into private, re-entered practice. I should say entered practice for the first time with a private law firm. I had mentioned to you that, as you know, I had two children, one who was closely approaching college age, and it was strictly an economic decision for me. It had nothing to do with my enjoyment of the work that I was doing. In fact, I love my work. So, bottom line, it was to pay the college tuition bills.
Something we all encountered. Not only were you director of the Division of Corporation Finance and held other positions there, but you did a lot towards educating the practicing bar and even law students, but particularly the practicing bar about the commission. I believe you were the one that originated the idea for the SEC Speaks and sold that idea to the commission, which probably took a lot of selling. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. While I originated the idea, which developed into the SEC Speaks Conference. Like everything else, it was a team effort. And credit must go to Bill Casey, who was then chairman, for permitting it, to Jim Sargent, who was close to Bill Casey, for also participating, as Al Summer. And the key person from PLI, who had confidence in the idea, was Mary Mulay. I felt that the private bar was essential to effective operations of the SEC, and the more that we could share information and do away with the mystery, it would result in the protection of investors, both from a disclosure standpoint and the raising of capital for our capital markets, which is so crucial. In addition, I was instrumental in co-starting with two others, namely Jim Hewitt and Al Summer, the University of California Securities Regulation Institute, as well as many other annual programs such as Securities Activities of Banks, before we had financial institutions. And I've been active in continuing legal education, including the Garrett Institute in Chicago and the Rocky Mountain Conference in Denver, Colorado, amongst others.
And you were an inspiration to a lot of other SEC people who were followed in your footsteps and doing those sorts of things. I've about exhausted my memory and my questions, but if there's anything else that you'd like to add, Alan, please do so.
Yes, I'd like to use this opportunity to thank my former colleagues, both at the commission level and the staff level, both in Corp Fin and outside of Corp Fin, they made the commission the great institution that it became, and I was privileged to be a part of it.
Thank you, Alan. We are now closing the interview at about 3:25 p.m.
Thank you, Dick.